Last May, on a Sunday afternoon, I went to visit my grandfather. The visit was not unusual. I had been visiting him every 2 or 3 months for several years, and this was simply one more of those visits. A Sunday in late spring, a bus journey across the city, an hour or two in his small kitchen, and the bus back. I had no reason at the time to think of it as anything else. My grandfather had lived in his small terraced house for over 40 years. My grandmother had died 8 years earlier, and after that he had stayed there alone, in the same kitchen, with the same brown furniture and the same brown teapot, which had been there since some point in the 1970s and which he was unwilling to replace. His life had narrowed, with the gentle inevitability that old age brings, to a small set of rooms, a small back garden, a small number of regular visitors, and the radio. When I rang the bell, he took a few seconds longer than usual to come to the door. I noticed this, in the way that one notices small things about people one loves, without thinking very much about it. The door opened, and there he was, a little smaller perhaps than the last time, but with the same careful, slightly amused eyes. He smiled and said, "Come in." I stepped inside, took off my coat, and followed him to the kitchen. We sat at the small table by the window, as we always did. He put the kettle on the stove. He had never quite trusted electric kettles, and made tea in the brown teapot. I had grown up watching him do this, and the gestures were entirely familiar. The careful measuring of the leaves, the small wait for the water, the way he warmed the cups before pouring. That afternoon, however, I noticed that I was watching him do it with slightly more attention than usual. I cannot fully account for this. It may have been that the kitchen was particularly quiet, or that I was tired, or that something, without my knowing it, was telling me to look. We drank our tea slowly. He told me about the small back garden, about the yellow flowers he had planted in April, and about a small grey bird that had started coming every morning to the bird table he had set up 2 years earlier. He thought it might be the same bird from the previous year. He had developed a theory about its routine. I listened and asked the kinds of small questions that the situation invited, and he was happy. I told him about my work, briefly, but it was apparent that the work was less interesting to him than the bird, and that this was not a slight, but a kind of preference. The world had become smaller for him, and what was inside the smaller world was, accordingly, more precise. After about 2 hours, I looked at my watch. The bus back was at 6, and I needed to be at the bus stop by 10:50. I stood, took our cups to the sink, rinsed them in the slightly tepid water that the old taps produced, and said I should go. My grandfather followed me, slowly, to the front door. It was at the door that something happened that I now remember in unusual detail. He held my hand, both hands, in fact, for a moment that was a fraction longer than was usual between us. He said, "Come again soon, will you?" His voice was warm, as it had been throughout the afternoon, but it carried faintly a small additional weight. I said I would come again soon. I meant it. I would not, however, see him again. He died in August. The death was peaceful, in the same kitchen, on a quiet morning. It was not a surprise, in the way that an old person's death after a slow decline is not a surprise, and it was, in another sense, completely a surprise, in the way that the death of someone you love is always a surprise, however much you have been telling yourself it is coming. What I have come to understand, in the months since, is that the visit in May has come to occupy more space in my memory than I would have expected, and considerably more space than the various other visits before it that were practically identical. I do not, on the whole, remember those other visits in any specific detail. They have merged into a general impression of him at the kitchen table, of the brown teapot, of conversations about the garden. The May visit, however, is unusually clear. I remember the slight pause before he came to the door. I remember the particular careful way he made the tea. I remember the bird he had been watching that morning. I remember his two hands on mine at the door. There is a question I have considered many times about whether he knew, whether the slightly longer pause at the door, the slightly tired voice, the careful, "come again soon," were ordinary, or whether some quiet awareness that I did not share had moved into him. It is the kind of question one cannot answer. The relevant person is not available to be asked. On the most careful inspection I can manage, I think he probably did not know any more than I did. He had not been ill in any acute sense. The decline had been slow and would continue slowly through the summer. There had been no obvious moment that day that could have told him. What I am remembering, when I remember the longer hand, is probably the ordinary tenderness of an old man saying goodbye to a grandchild on a Sunday afternoon with no particular suspicion that he was doing it for the last time. And yet, and this is the part that I have spent some time with, the visit has become unusually clear in my memory in a way that the previous visits have not. The detail is sharp. I noticed the teapot. I noticed his eyes. I noticed his two hands. I cannot quite tell whether some part of me had registered something at the time, in a way that the conscious part of me had not, or whether memory has simply done the work after the fact, sharpening, in retrospect, around the visit that turned out to be the last one, and consigning the others to a more general blur. Most likely, it is the second. Memory is not a recording. It is a small editor, working on its own quiet schedule, choosing what to keep and what to let go. It does not always tell us why it has kept what it has kept. The visit in May has been kept, I now understand, not because anything unusual happened in it, but because nothing more would happen after it. The lastness was not a quality of the visit itself. It was something that was added to the visit later by the simple fact of nothing else following. What I am left with, therefore, is a small, quietly preserved Sunday afternoon. The brown teapot, the kettle on the stove, the yellow flowers in the garden, the bird he had been watching that morning, the two hands at the door. None of these things were unusual at the time. All of them now are unusually clear. I think perhaps this is what it is to remember someone. To keep a small, precise place where they are still doing an ordinary thing, in an ordinary kitchen, on an ordinary afternoon, and to know that the place has become precious for reasons that have nothing to do with what is in it.